here as part of this working group. I do want to point out that there were 8 people in this working group who joined it, who were selected. People nominated themselves, and then a selection process was executed to pick be part of this group. And unfortunately, we didn't put a slide in with people's names on it, and I want to take a moment just to give people credit for having participated. Sarmad Hussain, who is actually ICANN staff now at this point, but when the group started, he wasn't. And so he participated in the early part of this group at this time until he had to resign as part of his new responsibilities when he joined ICANN. We also had Nishit Jain, Naoki Kambi, Jody Kolker, who does actually join me here today, so he'll be part of the discussion that we have after we get our 2 presentations, Takao Suzuki, Dennis Tan, Zheng Wang, and Edmund Chung, all of whom were participants in this particular working group. Okay, so next slide. One of the things that's interesting about talking about the display and submission of registration data is the number of different types of registration data elements that there are. And there are literally hundreds of them if you do a superset of all of the things that are used today in various registries, both in GTLDs and CCLDs, and put all that together. So one of the things that we did first was in deciding how to do our job was we realized that you could take all of these data elements and break them up into categories. So rather than looking at hundreds of data elements, we found that we could identify 12 categories of data elements. And that allowed us to scope our work so that we could focus on requirements for particular categories. And then as data elements come and go, depending on what registries need or other requirements that may or may not come from ICANN and the community at large, they would inherit requirements from the category that they fell into. Or if a new category came about, then it would be easy to set aside some people and time to talk about what new requirements might exist in that new category. So that was one of our first things to do here in grouping by categories. And I'll get in a bit more into the internationalization versus localization as we get into other slides. And of course, we wanted to pay a lot of attention to what else was going on. There's a lot happening, as there always seems to be in the ICANN community and in other communities at large, with respect to internationalization. You know, we're going to hear about the translation and transliteration work in a bit. There was the Directory Services Expert Working Group, which had started many of the efforts which are now in progress. And, of course, the IETF has its set of activities that it was doing in this space, too. So next slide. And I'm concerned, yeah, you downloaded these off the website, and this is not the most up-to-date set of slides. There should only be submission and directory services on this slide. The other two things shouldn't be there. But our scope was to look at the submission and the directory services or display side of internationalized registration data, and then to propose a data model consistent with those requirements as a starting point for the community as it considered the implementation of these internationalization requirements. Next slide. So the first thing that we had done after identifying categories and dividing our elements up into categories, as we started to think about requirements, we realized that there are 3 requirements that are useful or as first principles, and establish them as guiding everything else that we wanted to do. And the first one is the user capability principle. And the significance here is the observation that a user, a registrant, if you will, at the internet at large, should never be required to do more than they are ordinarily skilled at. So whatever your home language or script in use is, that should be what you have to do. You shouldn't, as an individual, be obligated to do any other kind of work. So if there was any work to be done with respect to internationalization, that should fall on the system somewhere in part of the system to figure out how to make that happen. Simplicity and reusability is all about other groups are doing things that are related to internationalization. So, for example, I mentioned the IETF as sort of an external group, and there are standards going on there. We want to take advantage of external standards if they exist and wherever they are, and choose the simplest standard that we could if there were multiple competing standards. That should seem like a fairly obvious thing to want to do. And then, of course, extensibility, you really want to think about the future. We can tell from history that the set of data elements that are part of registration data changes over time because it has changed over the couple of decades almost that this industry has really come into its own and existed. So we need to make sure that whatever we do to the best of our ability doesn't put constraints on what can happen in the future and develop something that, that accommodates those sets of things. So going on to the next slide, I've actually already covered the first point here about registrants only being required to use whatever script or language they're ordinarily skilled at, okay, whatever they would normally do in their day-to-day life. The second item, which is kind of interesting, which comes out of this, and this was partly born out of discussions of translation and transliteration, to the extent that translation and transliteration is going to occur or needs to occur wherever that is supposed to happen, you realize that you cannot effectively do that if you don't know the data that you're working with. You need to understand that data. You need to know certain properties about it. And the two properties that I'll focus on here is you need to know about the language and script in use in some way. So you'll hear a lot more about that when they talk about the translation and transliteration stuff. But for the purposes of this working group, it means that recognizing that you need that information is the requirement. And so that means that the system has to be aware of those things. We use the term tagging in our report. There is a paragraph in the report which explains the little sub-bullet that's here, and that's why I put it up here. It's actually a very important sub-bullet. Some people will take the tagging word and immediately associate that with the idea that I somehow, with each of the data elements as an implementation requirement, have to mark the fact that this data, I know what its script and its language is and those kinds of things. It's important in our report to understand we're not trying to be prescriptive in that way. The requirement is simply that that information be available and known in some, with some deterministic certainty. And with that in mind, we use the term tagging to refer to that requirement, and the actual implementation of it is still left for future work and decisions and choices. Next slide. So along the way, we discovered that we had to make a choice. We were either going to give advice about what you should do today to internationalize registration data and the full suite of that, or what we ultimately decided to do was to consider what would be the ideal place that we would like to be. You know, what should really exist in this world? If we could, you know, throw everything away almost and start over, what would you like internationalization to really look like? What would that really mean to the community? And so we chose the model of, since we're an expert working group and it's just our role to provide advice and recommendations for the community to then evaluate and decide where they want to go with, that we would take the model of looking at an ideal kind of situation and describe what we think the industry should look like and what circumstances should look like. And having done that, we identified a number of technical challenges that exist in the world today. So it would not be possible to immediately transition to supporting full internationalization. And these are some of the things that we had identified along the way that would make that difficult. The first, of course, is the EPP protocol itself, that basic protocol, which is the interaction between registries and registrars. It is the primary protocol used. It's certainly used in all GTLDs, and most CCTLDs use it today also. But there are certain technical features that are missing from that protocol if you're going to fully deploy internationalization. And we identify those things here. The lack of a language and script attribute, the lack of a fine-grained language and script attribute. So EPP is based on an underlying encoding mechanism, XML. And it, of course, does have features for tagging, for providing some script and language information. But what you find if you look in the details of our report is that that's not fine-grained enough. There's an object level that to which those language and script attributes apply, and that's not sufficient to support full generalization in the internationalization context. So that's something the community has to evaluate. How far do you want to go down this path? There's also the issue of a conversion mechanism. And what that refers to is if you do translation or transliteration, you somehow have to note that. You need to make that visible in some way that has to be part of the data. And then there's a relationship that has to happen between the original data and the converted data. And that's all part of this conversion mechanism attribute, and that information does not currently exist. So these are issues that will have to be, you know, asked and discussed and understood by the community. There's the question of the who is protocol. This issue is mostly solved because you do have RDAP as a replacement protocol for who is. So the directory services problem, to the extent the proper internationalized data exists at the registry, and the registry provides the directory services, if RDAP is the protocol that's used, then, you know, there are mechanisms in place for dealing with internationalization. But at the time that we started this work, the RDAP protocol development was also just beginning in the IETF. So we kind of had we both came to closure at a similar time. So the timing here was such that we just left this requirement in here and noted it, Paige. So we observe in the report, too, that if you're going to tag data in some way with respect to its script and language, then you need standardized tables of languages and scripts, not just the names of those languages and scripts, but the content of them. And that, in fact, does not exist. Even within individual countries or, you know, sovereign states, even they don't always know exactly what their language is. They just have variations and variants and things like that. So there are issues there. We also observe that in full support of internationalization, there are workflow changes that would probably be required at a registrar. Given that a registrar is the facing point, the entry point to registrants, in order to properly take in internationalized data, registrars have things that they have to do in order to be able to include all of this tagging or have knowledge about it, and the way in which they might interact with registrants. And there's also the postal address issue. You realize that we talk in detail about the fact that the Western convention of, you know, a name, address line 1, address line 2, you know, city, state, postal code, is really not an appropriate address system for the world at large. Those aren't really what the standards are. I mean, if you look at the UPU standards for what is a valid address or what is a functioning address, it does not actually require all of those components. So it's just something that one has to think about in terms of how you build your system. Where do you really want to go and how you're going to support those things? And then finally, on this page, we have the issue of internationalized email addresses. It's fairly obvious and, you know, straightforward to suggest that we should support internationalized email addresses. Well, you know, they haven't seen broad deployment, unfortunately, in that space. And so that becomes an issue, or the deployment tends to be rather localized. So you have regional deployments of internationalized email addresses. And functionally, they're not operationally backwards compatible. If you're going to fully support them, given that email systems is by definition a store and forward service, there are players in your email delivery who may not be directly associated with you or, in fact, the final destination. And so you have issues of them having an upgraded system in order to support it, as well as changes. I mean, if you're the registrar facing a registrant, you know, you have to support that registrant in an internationalized email address. There are some real changes that have to happen there, not just on your interface, but in your email system and your ability to deliver those messages and use them. So that's a technical issue that needs to be considered. Moving on, localization versus internationalization. We developed these terms and you know, started using them. The important point here is that internationalization simply means that the data can easily be converted, and converted meaning translated or transliterated for its local audience, for whoever wants to use it. So the way to understand that is there is no single internationalized form of an address. You wouldn't say something like, you know, English in U.S. ASCII is the internationalized form of contact information or registration information for the internet. Really, whatever form you take the data in represents an internationalized form. What you need from an internationalized form is that it is sufficiently identified –